Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Let's hang out.
Let's hang out.
And let's talk about what lesbians are about.
Let's hang out.
And let's listen to two lesbians shout.
Let's hang out.
Let's hang out.
This episode of Les Hangout is sponsored by Bold Strokes Books, where LGBTQ characters are always the stars of their stories. For listeners of the show, through June 30th, Bold Strokes Books is offering 20% off any one ebook when you go to boldstrokesbooks.com and check out with the coupon code LESHANG in all capital letters. That's 20% off an ebook at boldstrokesbooks.com, coupon code LESHANG, L-E-Z-H-A-N-G.
Les Hang.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Les Hangout, the podcast that's perfectly splendid.
Perfectly.
Yes. Oh god, I'm sorry, I opened a can of worms already.
Do you want me to talk in my little Flora accent the whole time?
I was hoping you would.
Here we
from
are.
From the West Coast, I'm Lee Holmes Foster.
And from the East Coast, I'm Ellie Brigida Poppins. To those of you who have been with us through this whole journey, thank you as always for listening. If you're a new listener, welcome. We're excited to have you here. And here's what's happening this week.
This week in the Lesdom.
This Week in the Lesdom is a place where we can touch base each episode about things going on with the podcast or otherwise. And today is a very sad day. It's the final episode of season 4.
Our last one. Our last hurrah for this season.
It's been a really great season, and we're going to miss all of you. But don't worry, we will be back for season 5 on September 6th. So set your calendars. We're coming back for you.
Don't we won't be worry. Gone so long. Don't and we've got things to keep you busy in the meantime, starting with The Flame on June 2nd. That's right. We have been talking about it for so long. You know we're ready. We hope you're ready. It's happening. Are you ready, Ellie?
I am. I was going to say I am ready, but then I was like, you're not ready. I keep saying I feel like I'm in tech week. Any of our musical theater people, like, I'm like, tech week, and it's a podcast. Like, I don't need to, like, there's no dress rehearsal. Like, it's done. It's ready to go. I just feel so like, oh my god, it's the show. It's happening.
It's happening. It's gonna happen. So be ready for our first listening party. We're going to be doing weekly listening parties every week on Wednesdays. So you can join us on June 2nd at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, and you can listen to the episode with us, and then we'll hang out a bit and chat about it. We're so excited for everyone to hear it. We're so excited to hear everybody's reactions and hear what everyone thinks. It's going to be a blast.
You're going to love it. We also have a very exciting announcement about The Flame. We have very recently joined the Broadway Podcast Network, which is a huge, huge deal. The Broadway Podcast Network is a huge podcasting network all about Broadway. They've produced many musical podcasts before, including Bleeding Love. They have Tony nominees everywhere, all over the place. They have all these big producers, and we're going to be a part of them. So pretty freaking cool. You could check us out anywhere. It doesn't change anything about where you can find the podcast, but hopefully it'll reach far more people now. So we're very excited about that.
We also have stuff coming up that's not related to The Flame. It's hard to imagine,
but we've
just been so busy. So also the same week, we have Porch Pride coming up on June 5th in collaboration with Remo Pride. We have put together such an amazing event, and we want to give a huge shout out to Kristen, who is our production assistant, who has been spearheading this whole event. We have so much stuff going on. We have yoga, we have panels, we have a kids corner, we have a film screening room, we have meet and greets with some really incredible guests that you may or may not have heard of, like Maddie Phillips and Natasha Negavanlis and Nicole Stamp and like so many just really cool
Vico
people.
Ortiz.
Vico Ortiz. Oh, Valerie Lohman that you may know from, you know, like The Flame and all of her other cool projects, like a BAFTA nomination. Just some really fun people that you're going to want to come hang out with. And then we have an after party with a DJ and a comedy show, and it's going to be bonkers fun. And we had so much fun at Porch Pride last year, and this year is going to be even bigger and better. So
you got to come. We're going to see
you.
You
got to come. Come buy your tickets. We have needs-based options, but you should register so that we know, you know, who's coming to meet and greets, all in that. So we want to see you there. We want to see your porches. We want to see your cosplays. It's going to be a crazy good time.
We are also doing Spirit Week again this year. We had such a blast last year. We cannot wait to do it again with you this year. We're going to be doing it the week after this week. So next Monday, which is June 7th, we will be starting our Spirit Week. We'll post it all over our socials. Do not worry. You will know what's happening. There's going to be a cosplay day. There's going to be a pajama day. There's going to be a dapper day. That was my favorite day last year because we saw how absolutely sexy all of our listeners are. Love you all. So we cannot wait to see all of those. You're going to use the hashtag LHO Spirit Week and post all your pictures, and we're going to love seeing them.
Amazing. We also have more events coming up. We are going to be hosting Pride Trivia, working with Aeronaut Brewing. That's coming up on June 24th. So you know we love a good trivia night, and you're not going to want to miss this one.
And to clarify, that is still virtual, so anyone can come. You don't have to live in the Boston area, even though we are doing it with Aeronaut Brewing Company that is based in Somerville. In the Greater Les universe, we wanted to talk about Alex Dobkin, who passed away at 80 years old. Alex Dobkin formed the group Lavender Jane with the musician Kay Gardner, which was an all-woman team of musicians, engineers, even vinyl pressers in 1973. So I'm just like, this woman was amazing. I wish I was a part of that all-women sound engineer team, but it was the first album to ever be entirely produced by women, which is so cool. And so we just wanted to mention, because Alex lived such an amazing life, we just wanted to mention them.
An in memoriam is what we're looking for.
Yes.
Yes. In less sad news, I guess, we also want to talk about a couple, you know, like crazy things going on lately, like Tessa Thompson.
Oof.
Anybody else seeing that? The gals palling around?
I love it.
Listen, we are always here for a few different things. One, like consensual poly relationships that are like living their best lives. Here
True.
For it. Women like canoodling around on like balconies.
Here
for
it.
For it. We're here for all of that. So yeah, live your best life, Tessa Thompson.
Yes.
Get it.
We also could not go this week without talking about Elliot Page in board shorts, just looking beautiful, living his best life. And we are just so happy to see him so happy and really showing up as this beautiful himbo.
Our himbo king. We love it.
So into it. That's what's happening this week. Back to you, Ellie and Lee.
Thanks, Ellie and Lee. And welcome to episode 20, our final episode of season 4 and our next installment of Les Essentials.
Les Essentials is a recurring segment on the show where we dive into classic lesbian movies or TV shows.
And as a reminder, we are also writing and producing original songs for all of our Les Essentials episodes now. So you will want to stick around to the end of the episode to hear our song. It's Rude.
It will wreck you. So get ready for that. Because for this Les Essentials, we are talking about the beautifully haunting love story in the 2020 TV miniseries, The Haunting of Bly Manor.
So much haunting.
So much haunting.
It's hauntingly beautiful.
It's hauntingly sad. It's hauntingly splendid.
Bly Manor. And we are joined by a special guest today. Some of you know her, some of you may not yet, because if you've come to any of our trivia events, you have definitely met Kristen. If you haven't, she's been the behind the scenes making everything happen for us this season.
And she is our wonderful Let's Hang Out production assistant.
And so we are so, so pleased to welcome Kristen Meerson to the podcast.
Hello. Yes, I'm very excited to be here. I'm very excited to feel all of the feels about Bly Manor again for the 400th time, because I feel them every day since I came out in October. No, I'm never really
I think the bigger question
prepared.
Is, have you stopped feeling them ever since you first saw it?
Probably not, no. Mm-mm. I don't think so. I don't think there's even one day where I haven't like at least thought about Bly Manor or done something related to Bly Manor.
And that is why we asked Kristen to join us for this episode.
We have a Bly Manor expert here. I will say I was watching pretty much every single scene with Danny and Jamie today. And my friend Alexa, who just sneezed behind me. hey, Lex. She called me to, like, check in because she was picking me up. I'm at her apartment. And she's like, hey. And I was like, hey, Alexa. Like, are you okay? Like, what is wrong with you? Like, no, I was just watching some Bly Manor compilation videos. Like, I'm not crying about anything in my real life, but like, it's so sad.
You're like, I'm just sad about fictional lesbians again.
When you watch the video of like just their moments all together, somehow it hits almost harder just because you see it all at once. And every time I do that, I cry.
When I watched it first, like, I'm not really a big horror person. I do not like being scared. And so, like, they'd have a really nice moment, and I'd be like, oh, and then I'd be scared right after. And so I feel like it's actually really nice to only talk about their moments. I'm like, is this a horror series? No, it's a love story, which
it's not a ghost story. It's a love story.
Flora says at the end, it's not a ghost story. It's a love story. Yes, yes. So let's talk our IMDb synopsis of Bly Manor. Let's dive in. I'm so excited.
Okay. I'm going to preface this with saying I have some problems with this.
We always okay? will.
We always will. I know. I have like some
right.
major ones. So I want to prepare people. Okay. Here's our IMDb synopsis of Bly Manor. After an au pair's tragic death, Henry hires a young American nanny to care for his orphaned niece and nephew who reside at Bly Manor with the chef, Owen, groundskeeper Jamie, and housekeeper Mrs. Gross.
So let me guess what your biggest problem with this
do you
is.
Do you want to guess? Go ahead, Ellie. See if you can get close to it.
Is it that the most active participant is Henry?
What in the fuck? Like, what?
The whole
How?
Story is told through Henry's perspective.
Right?
He's
Look,
barely there.
Given that we just did an episode on how every lesbian story somehow has to revolve around a man. And I'm like, I'm sorry, what white man wrote this IMDb synopsis and how dare he?
Yes, and our synopses for this entire series will be a lot different. So, Kristen, I know this is not a should have been gay, but we're doing a Les Essentials on Bly Manor. We're barely going to talk about any of the ghosts,
That's
to be honest.
True.
Any of the scary stuff. We're just going to talk about our favorites, Danny and Jamie. So what's your synopsis for Bly Manor if it's only about Danny and Jamie?
Okay. So a young American goes to London to escape Compet, which is literally following her around everywhere she goes.
Yep.
And she meets a sexy gardener, and she realizes she can't stop herself from being a lesbian anymore because Jamie's just too sexy to resist. And so they kiss amongst some flowers, and then they decide to spend they just U-Haul immediately after that, kind of. And then they spend the entire rest of their lives together. It's beautiful. It's an amazing U-Haul love story.
It's a great U-Haul love story. That was a really great synopsis. Thank
that's
you
pretty much
that,
all
Kristen.
That happened. I mean, that's what I saw.
I know, I was going to do our plot recap, but it's done. That's it.
We we knocked it out of the park. We hit all the big points.
Two traumatized lesbians find each other in a manor home and decide to live life one day at a time together forever.
Two trauma-bonded lesbians built an entire life
their trauma
based on taking care
each
of each other and their trauma.
Incredible. What's your new synopsis, Ellie, if you had to write one?
Oh, my God. The thing is, I said this to Kristen, and I didn't even write one down for myself. But after watching all the clips,
I would say
A Walk to Remember for lesbians.
Ooh, oh. I like that.
Okay.
Either A Walk to Remember or The Notebook for lesbians.
Okay. I was going to go with a different movie. So I was going to say, like, Imagine Me and You plus Ghosts plus Bury Your Gaze.
Yeah.
Minus Heck.
Yeah.
Minus Heck. Except I guess we sort of have a Heck. But.
Yeah, but I don't like him.
But
I like Heck.
Heck is nice. True. Heck is, like, a nice guy. And Edmund isn't really, I don't know. I don't like him.
No, Edmund is a... quote, like in quotes, nice guy. Edmund is a guy who thinks he's entitled to a woman because he is
a man.
Nice. Quote unquote nice. And therefore he's
also
not nice.
I'm just realizing now that I forgot to fill Kristen in. Since we obviously just hosted, some of you came to our trivia event on Haunting of Hill House and Bly Manor. The night that I hosted and Kristen and Ellie were not there, but I forgot to fill both of you in on the person who answered the question about Edmund's name by also putting in parentheses, Deadmond.
Oh,
It's my favorite.
I call
thing.
Him Deadmond.
Deadmond.
All the time.
Who needs Deadmond?
The fandom calls him Deadmond. That's like all anybody calls
yes,
him
and
on
I
Twitter.
Love
it's
it.
My favorite.
And I love that people, I love that someone actually answered
Deadmond.
The question. They were like, here's his name, also
but
Deadmond.
Also,
and I was like,
Deadmond.
Yes. Correct. I wanted to award extra points. I wasn't able to, but in my heart, I did.
Being homophobic killed him. So, I mean, I guess, like, score one for the gays.
Literally. Yeah, Deadmond.
Amazing.
Okay, so are we ready? I'll try to do a very...
Okay, do it.
I'll try
Walk
to do
us
a
through
quick,
a love story.
Yes.
Quick and dirty love story plot synopsis. So... our first scene, we start out with Jamie. She wakes. It's very important, the first season, because the first scene is the same as the last scene. So the first scene, Jamie wakes up. She's looking for Danny. She's looking in the water of her bathtub. She's looking in the sink. We have no clue why she's doing this, but if you've seen the show before, now we know why. Then we start with the wedding. Owen's making this whole speech. To truly love another person is to accept that the work of loving them is worth the pain of losing them.
No, stop it. I'm done already. I'm tapping out.
Owen, like, was way off base, like, way out of line with that quote. That quote came to fight, like...
an attack.
I've written down a lot of quotes.
It hurts.
It's a lot. It hurts. So then we start with older Jamie.
A lot of quotes came to a fight.
Yes. Older Jamie's telling the story. It's a ghost story. It's not her story, even though... it is your story. It's full of ghosts. Then we get the entire backstory with Danny and her fiance, but I sort of skipped through that, to be honest. We have all these flashbacks, right? So we're going back. So we have the flashback to when they first meet. Jamie walks in overalls.
That's it. Done.
That's
scene.
The scene.
No. I'm going to say Jamie walks in overalls. Danny tracks her like a freaking like homing beacon of gay.
Yep.
That's how I would describe that scene.
She tracks her like a homing beacon of gay. You are correct. And we also know that the others, I wrote so many quotes because they're so good. The others in the room just assumed they'd already met, which if the au pair was honest, was the way she felt when she met the woman. So literally they meet and she feels like she's known her forever. Then...
one might almost describe that as a twin flame, Ellie.
Oh my God, we know about twin flames from Elena. I'm done. Then we have the scene in the garden where Jamie is talking to Hannah and she says, on a scale of zero to American, how would you rate her American? And also, a bit too pretty. So this is, I feel like, the first moment that we're like...
A bit too pretty.
The au pair totally is into her. And now we're like, okay, well, she's clearly into her as well. Then we also have this is one of their biggest moments. Danny's really upset. She sees Flora in the glasses. She runs away crying. and Jamie comforts her.
They have this ease with each other. They have the immediate sparks with each other. It's so funny too, because it's like you look at some of these early scenes that apparently straight people like were surprised when they get together, and you're just like, how?
Wait, were they?
How? I don't know. Yes. I think they were. I think that by the time they kiss, like there were people who were like, oh my God, they're kissing. And you're like, how? How do you miss all of the setup? Like, it's very obvious. But I think it's obvious in a way that reads very naturally to queer people, you know?
Yes.
Quite. But yes, you're the only person who can calm me down when I'm so worked up about my dead ex-fiance. It's like straight out of a fan fiction, honestly. Who am I kidding?
It is. So we have that beautiful moment. You know, she makes her laugh when she's crying, and she also is vulnerable with her. She's like, I cry too. Everything's okay. At this moment, I wrote in my notes, what are their signs? And I never figured it out. But I'm so curious. So,
well, we can dedicate some discussion time to it. Okay?
Yeah, we'll have some discussion later about their signs. This is the first time she ever calls her Poppins. Thank God.
Ugh, stop it. Look, the flirty names for each other, like, come on, keep it in your pants, ladies.
Exactly. Like, get it together. There's a whole scene now where it's sort of reversed, where Jamie starts freaking out and Danny is comforting her. And so you do have this reciprocal kind of relationship, like Kristen was talking about at the beginning. They both have drama and they're both good at taking care of each other in their drama. Then there's the whole sleepover. You know what I'm talking about?
Wait, which the one in the by the bonfire episode, or which one?
No, it's before the bonfire. So they have a sleepover because Flora's like, let's have a sleepover.
Oh, yes.
Everyone stay over. And that's where we have the most beautiful conversation, right? The wrong kind of love can fuck you up. And then Jamie says, I know why so many people mix up love and possession. And Danny says, people do, don't they? Mix up love and possession. I don't think that should be possible. They're opposites, really, love and ownership. That quote gets me.
Hearing quotes like that now, like knowing everything about what's coming in their story and like this whole thing about how like you can't own each other and you can't hold on to each other even when you so desperately want to. And it's just like, it is gutting. It's just gutting.
It is completely heart-wrenching. So we have that beautiful moment. And then we find out that Owen's mom died. We have that whole thing where they are leaving each other and Danny says, I'm so glad you stayed. And Jamie says, I am too. There's so many tropes in this. We'll talk about it later. But we have a we have a hand touch.
Yeah.
We have an eye linger.
Love it.
And we have a who the hell knew? And so we have this like gay ass woman who's like, oh, I didn't know this straight girl who I was into is actually into me too. Cool. So we have all that. Love it. Then we have the funeral. Jamie shows up. She's really looking hot. She's all cleaned up. Danny is surprised. She's having a rough time. She doesn't want to go to the funeral. She asks her to unzip her. She's like, oh, interesting, Poppins. And, you know, that's the whole thing.
is that how the scene goes, Ellie?
Yeah.
Like, you love can you do it with the accent?
She says, blimey. Thank you, Kristen.
You're welcome. She's like, blimey.
What else does she say there, Kristen, when she says, if I find
my
out,
favorite
do you know
thing
that
in the
quote?
World, my favorite thing she says. She says, if I find out you've not been relaxing, there'll be serious consequences. And then she like lingers as she closes the door and she gives Danny like this look of like, whew, it's a lot. And Danny's just standing there like having a little gay meltdown. It's a lot.
The looks are a lot. There's nothing gays love more than looks and handholds and pinky touches, and we got it all.
We got everything
I
we wanted.
Also, I would like to say that a little gay meltdown pretty much describes Danny at any moment in this entire show.
She's a
Danny's
little gay
literally
whirlwind.
Gay panic.
She's gay panic personified.
She is.
The way she walks is gay panic culture. Like, that's just who she is.
Just clenched fists, shoulders forward, head forward, just power walking her way around in a little gay meltdown. as start to finish. It's the entire time.
Yeah.
We feel so seen.
So much panic. Speaking about panic. So then we have the fire pit. Also great. Then they leave the fire pit and we have this whole... I just have to read the quotes. I'm sorry. They're so good.
Do it. They're good. Hit us.
The au pair was tired. She had been tired for so long. Without even knowing it, she took her own advice she'd given to Miles. She'd chosen someone to keep close to her that she could feel tired around. She'd chosen someone who might help her burn away the shadows.
Stop it.
This is, remind me to bring this up again later. This is the difference between like choosing to be with someone, right? There's like a choice element and that like ownership and possession of like, you are mine and now I'm holding on to you so tight you can't choose to leave, right? It's like there's this big
looking at you, Peter.
Yeah. Big choice.
I think
element.
Danny also felt quite owned in the Edmund situation, and that's why she doesn't want to do it again. You know, she wouldn't do that to someone else.
Danny would never.
Oh my God, don't. Speaking of quotes.
Leave. Kristen just melts off the couch right now is what's happening.
I'm gonna die. It's fine. Everybody can come back for me later.
Leave. And then our next scene, so they're tired together, they're in the greenhouse, and we have like the classic first date that gays all go on where they share their
trauma.
Can
I also mention that they also have these like flannel blankets that they bring with them into the
greenhouse?
Because that was like peak lesbianism too.
Okay.
It's like
I also want to take the opportunity to, just because I know we'll talk about it more, but while we talk about how, like, oh my God, why do we still somehow have to center the man in our lesbian love stories? Have you seen the behind the scenes images of when they shoot this scene? And like,
yes.
he literally has to be chilling.
Right on their shoulder.
Yeah. His little head is like right over Amelia Eve's shoulder, just being like, hey girls.
Like they're kissing. And his head is just on Amelia's shoulder, like just right there, that close to them while they're kissing. It's the wildest behind the scenes photo.
I hate it.
And it's so unnecessary. Why?
It's so unnecessary. Well, yeah, that's the most frustrating thing, right? Is like we have this like really nice kissing scene and then it's completely ruined by this man.
We can't even have it. They won't even let us have this one moment.
It's so
rude. Not yet. We'll get more.
We'll get more. Thank God.
Like the last Edmund scene, right? Like Edmund kind of goes away.
He literally does go away once she's like, I'm gay. She's like, bye.
She does like a little ritual too, like a little get rid of Edmund ritual, which is really cute and really gay.
So then, you know, we have this, she leaves, Jamie leaves because she's like, Danny, clearly you don't want this because
she's
you're
hurt.
Haunted by Compet, you know, whatever. But we have a really cute scene where Danny brings her coffee to apologize. So awkward, so cute. She brought her coffee. It's horrific coffee.
Also, this is how you know she's like a baby gay and she's kind of new to all this. Like, it's iced coffee.
Yeah,
Danny.
Why would she
it's
bring regular coffee?
Wait,
what are you doing?
Is that a gay thing? Do gay people only drink iced coffee?
I only drink iced coffee.
I also only drink iced coffee, but I didn't know it was gay.
I don't even drink coffee, and I can tell you that it is gay culture
it's
to
gay
drink
culture
only
to drink
iced
coffee.
Even in the winter. It's also a Boston thing. We drink, like, we'll have an iced coffee, like, in the snow.
Yes.
And everyone in Boston is gay. Therefore, science, it's a gay
everyone.
Thing.
Okay, great. And the transitive property.
Yes.
Which is gay. Amazing. So we have this beautiful flirting scene where, you know, Poppins, you flirt. That whole thing. That was British. That wasn't Scottish. Fuck.
So precious.
Get it
you
together.
Got up at 6 a.m. just for this. No. What? Not for this. Totally not for this. Don't call me out. I'm trying so hard. Poor Danny.
It's so cute and sweet. And then she asks her out on a date. And she asks her out on a date.
She literally asks her to sleep with her.
She says, there's like this pub. It's in, you know, it's in Bly. It's actually right underneath your apartment.
No big deal or anything.
Not that I looked it up. Maybe did some research.
Not for any
NBD.
Reason.
It's so great.
I didn't suggest that pub specifically for any real reason, I swear.
Yes.
Hey, look, props to her, man. Props to Danny for that move, because, like...
I was impressed, because this girl is, like, straight out of the compet closet, and she just ran straight ahead into it. She just, like, she ran gaily forward. She was like, I don't have time for this anymore. Like, I'm just going to throw my whole self in and just dive into the lesbian pool.
I'm
like,
here
I don't
for
have
it.
Time for waiting.
Here for it.
I was so into her energy.
She really does. She kills it. She kills it. And it pays off because, you know, Jamie comes back to the house later that night after they're dealing with all the craziness with Flora. We don't, like, we're literally, we don't care what's happening in this haunted house.
It doesn't matter.
She comes, people are like, Flora who? What are you talking
who's Flora?
About?
We don't
It's
care.
Fine.
So Jamie shows back up in her leather jacket, first of all, and says, maybe Poppins might fancy a little boredom, which is just so, they're so fucking cute. And then she takes her for the moonflower little date. Kristen, do you want to tell us about the moonflower date? I know this is one of your favorite things. You have a tattoo as well. Tell us about your tattoo.
I do. I did get the moonflowers tattooed onto me because it's just that amazing. And I'm just that gay for this that I had to have it with me forever. Yeah. So Jamie, who has been just really closed off and kind of like distant and doesn't really like to put herself out there and is like more cold, but like actually has a really big heart and just like doesn't want people to really see that because she's been hurt so much. She decides that she's finally going to just like throw it all out there, and she's going to give everything that she has of her story to Danny to just take it or leave it, because she figures, you know what, if I'm going to get hurt either way, if I at least tell her up front, then whatever happens from there, that's on her.
And she does the longest monologue I've ever heard in my life.
She does. She does the longest monologue ever. I don't know how she even managed to do all of this, but I know people who have like memorized the whole monologue and done it. So like, I know it is doable, but it's a lot. And she gives her entire life story. Like, she takes her into the woods, and Danny thinks she's like gonna kill her because, I mean, she's just dragging her into the darkness. And then in that darkness, she shows her these beautiful white flowers that like only bloom for what, like 2 months a year? And all the buds only bloom one time and then they die. And she's like, it's a heck of a lot of work just for this. But then she goes into her story about like why it's worth it. Danny just sits there and like absorbs it all. And Jamie looks so like nervous and is kind of like has the little anxiety shakes like the entire time. And you can tell it's really hard for her to talk about. Like, especially the stuff of, like, prison and her parents and her time in the foster families. But she does it anyway, and I just think that that's so brave. And after that, like, Danny decides that even with all that, she's going to accept Jamie for all that means. And I just think that's so beautiful. And I think what's important about the moonflower scene is that it kind of sets up everything that goes on after that, because they talk about mortality and how mortality is natural and how it's part of life and you have to accept it, and things are still worth doing even if they're temporary, and things that are beautiful are still beautiful and meaningful even if they don't last forever, and they're still worth going for even though you can't have them forever. And that's like literally what happens with them. So
I'm tapping out again.
So
I'm out.
Sad.
I'm out.
I'm
yes.
sorry.
I mean, I love she says too, sometimes someone like this moonflower might be worth the effort.
Just Jamie with her little heart in her hand saying, please love me. And you're like,
please
okay.
love me. She's never been loved before in like her whole life. Like her whole life is just filled with sadness and people not accepting her and people bullying her and being mean to her.
Well,
and
listen,
using
I
her.
Imagine that like the, you know, Dyke March in Bly's probably like a pretty small affair. So not a lot of options.
No, she was probably so surprised. Like that little who knew, like was probably even more like in her head. She probably went home that day and was like, holy shit, a lesbian in Bly. Like,
it's not just me. There's more of us out there. There are dozens of us.
I thought I was the only
dozens.
And it's kind of great because her seeing, I think that like that is probably the first time anyone's ever recognized Dani for who she is. Like Dani's never really gotten clocked.
Or, oh,
like,
hey man, you know, that seamstress clocked her. What are you talking about?
A lesbian. Okay, well the seamstress did clock her. You're right. You're right. But like since she's been like out and like living her new lifestyle, that's like she hasn't, you know, been seen before. So I think that that was a big moment for her to be like, oh crap, other people are noticing. That means I should really start to deal with this.
Yep. And also like other people are noticing and like this person that I find ridiculously attractive is noticing is sort noticing. Of a big deal. There's so many great quotes in this whole thing. The best one, too, is that's where all its beauty lies in the mortality of the thing, like you were talking about, Kristen.
I like when they talk about how, like, how Dani can't control who lives and who dies because Dani's, like, so haunted by her guilt. Like, she feels responsible for Edmund's death. And that's, like, a large part of why the compet man is able to keep following her around because she feels responsible for it because she did one thing for herself and stopped being selfish for a whole 1 second of her 27 something years alive. And then like he died immediately. So it probably felt like she was being punished by the universe for like daring to like accept her sexuality, which is truly horrible.
Well, and especially in the time too, like the time, yeah. The era that this is set in too, like the amount of just era. Shame that was being hammered into you anyways, like,
I know.
It was really horrible. So I just really liked that because what Jamie said there really kind of absolved Dani of any responsibility in that situation and of any of, and gave her room to say, like, you don't need to feel guilty for this. Like, death just, it happens and you're not responsible.
And then she doesn't feel guilty for what happens next. She sleeps better than she's ever slept before because she had good sex.
For the first time in her life.
It literally is like the au pair could not remember the last time she slept this well and she thought perhaps she never had. And I literally just have in my notes, lesbian sex will do that.
She does that. She wakes up looking so satisfied, like just so purely peaceful and happy, content, like 100% into herself, like vibing, really feeling it.
It's great. So we have
she gets to feel like that for a whole like what one day before it all goes down.
Yeah, I will say I have to always comment on this on any film we see. There's not enough sex in Bly Manor.
There's not.
Why didn't they show it? I don't understand. They didn't show any of it. Like. We were missing that. That whole scene is just fades out.
It's the same shit
we constantly get,
which is, to be fair, I like it in Bly Manor because I think the point of their relationship is that it is so, like, innocent and pure. Yeah. However, it still could be innocent and pure and you could have, like, a beautiful, like, sex scene between the two of them.
Yeah, I just thought it was strange that, like, because Hill House is by the same people and Theo has sex, like there's sex scenes in that, and like obviously those are not the type of sex scenes that you'd be getting. I mean, that style that they went there isn't the same thing they'd be doing for Dani and Jamie, but I was surprised that there wasn't just at least like a little more something.
Do we see any sex scenes in the entire show?
Rebecca and Peter, I thought maybe.
Do they have an actual sex scene though, or do we just get like implied?
They were like, weren't they like starting to maybe have sex, but then they got walked in on by Hannah that one time maybe. In that wing that they're not supposed to be in?
But yeah, so I feel like the fact that we don't really see other sex.
I don't think there's a lot of sex, even heterosexual sex.
Makes
I don't think
me be
a
like,
lot of sex in
okay,
general.
However, like you could have given it to us.
And I do like that they're not hyper-sexualized characters because a lot of times lesbians are like over-sexualized. So in one respect, it's good. But, like, on the other hand, me as a whore, excuse me.
Also, me is just like, I want to see the scene. Come on.
I just really want to see it. I feel like I was
robbed. We were
that,
totally
but
robbed.
It's fine. It's fine because so many people have written
I feel
it.
Like you're just trying to delay this now, Ellie. Come on.
Yeah, so nothing else happens. That's the end. Okay, so we have... you know, they have their sex scene and then there's the whole day that everything goes down. And so at night, Jamie's like, I'm going to leave. And, you know, or.
Which is the worst, dumbest thing she's ever done
she's
in her
like,
life.
I'm going to leave. And Danny's like, well, you could come back tonight if you want. And she's like, I don't know, but there'll be nights. There'll be plenty of nights for us.
There will be other nights.
To be fair, still true.
There will be, but still.
Yeah.
There aren't more nights where Danny's not possessed. She's possessed every single night after that.
Yeah, yeah. But their kiss is really nice in that hallway. There's some, it's beautiful.
The best one.
And she says, you promise? And she says, I promise. And they have this little cute little promise. Then Danny becomes possessed. So
that's, also there's ghosts in this show. Did y'all know that?
So that sucks. Yeah. Did you know that there were going to be ghosts?
Yeah. That's so when we Danny, find out there's ghosts. We had no hint of ghosts until then. Really?
No.
We've glossed. Well, we talked about Deadmond, but like we've kind of glossed over a lot. It's fine.
But like, I don't think he's a ghost. He's just like a thing that she sees in her head. Like he's not really there.
Not like the other ghosts. No.
Like he's not. A ghost. He's just like a mental thing.
Yeah, a mental ghost. But yeah, so she gets possessed. She takes the Lady of the Lake into herself. And then it's uphill and downhill from there, I would say.
It's a roller coaster of a final episode.
So
yeah.
It's a whirlwind.
And I will say, well, when we do the discussion, a lot of articles have talked about how Jamie and Danny didn't get, like, it's actually like, okay, yeah, great queer love story, but also, like, they should have had more time together before she became possessed, rather than having it all be in one episode where we get.
And the thing is, they probably did have a lot more time together. We just didn't get to see it. It would have been nice if they'd shown us. Like, there are times that they've said, where they say things like, I told you about how I was engaged, right? Or my fiance. So they've spoken at other times. Like, they have other moments together. They work together every freaking day. Like, there's just, they just chose not to show us. Like,
but it's okay. So, okay. So we have this. And Danny becomes possessed, and she has this whole speech where she said, it's quiet, but it isn't peaceful. It's rage, blah, blah, blah. She's walking through a dense jungle. But then we have this this beautiful moment where Jamie says, do you want company while you wait for your beast in the jungle? And so, and then we have the pinky touch. Pinkies. I told you we were going to have a pinky touch.
We stan a gay pinky touch always and forever.
Yes.
So cute. So
and then, precious. You know, they decide they're going to leave together, take everything one day at a time. One day at a time is fine by me, as long as those days are spent with you, basically, right?
Yeah, it's, as long as those days are with you, Poppins, one day at a time is fine by me.
Stop it.
And days turn into months and a year. And then we get this Imagine Me and You scene, which is actually like a very intentionally Imagine Me and You in the flower shop. Where she says, I'm in love with you, Poppins, and we have to be together forever. And then they kiss in the back. We don't even see that either. God damn it. I'm getting more angry as they see this.
They kiss, and it's really pretty, but then they just run off screen.
Yeah, like, why don't we actually can we also recreate Imagine Me and You with the scene in the back where they're making out?
Where they are on the roses, but maybe, like, minus the part where they get stabbed in the back by the roses. Yeah.
What do you think Jamie would sound like saying you're a wanker number 9? Quick question.
Honestly, hilarious. Do you want me to do it? No.
She would sound amazing.
Oh, yeah. Also, she gives her a moonflower.
She does, which means she's been, like, cultivating that moonflower for months, like, in secret, like, waiting for it. Like, she's been planning the perfect moment to say I love you for the first time.
It's so beautiful.
And she's been, like, hiding this moonflower from Danny, which, like, they live together. So, like, where is she hiding it? Like, they work in the same shop. Where is she growing this moonflower?
She's got secrets. Listen.
That's dedication.
She got some secrets.
That is dedication.
It's peak lesbianism at its finest. Like,
it really is. And then time moves by pretty quickly. So now we're at 5 years. They're in domestic bliss. And there was peace, is what they say. Until Danny sees the Lady of the Lake. Past the Lady of the Lake. I don't care about the Lady of the Lake. Let's just talk about the top hat and overalls.
And the suspenders that Jamie has on in that scene because...
Jamie's gay outfit completely takes her out. So that's great.
And that outfit, like, brings Dani back. Like, she sees Jamie in that outfit, and she then sees her own reflection again. So, I mean, like, you can be so gay that you just knock the ghost out
that
of people.
That is the thing, right? Like,
a gay exorcism right there.
She should have had less, like, the beautiful thing about it is that she should have had less time, but she had more time because of how gay she is. Like, literally. And then we have their marriage.
I really do think so. Yeah. Her love for Jamie, like, keeps her going.
Then we have the marriage proposal. So she gives her a clattering in the roots of a plant. Does anyone want to read? Do you want me to read the speech or does someone want to read the speech?
Yeah, why don't you just read all the quotes to us and slowly destroy us?
I can say the speech. I don't even actually need it.
Do you have it memorized?
She walks in with this plant. Maybe. So she walks in with this plant and Jamie's stirring the pot of sauce and she's not very good at it. And apparently she's burned the sauce plenty of times in the past. There are many years in this kitchen. And she says, "What's that then?" And then Dani has the plant and she says, "Found it on the street, wanted to save it." And then Jamie gets like the cutest little smile of like, "I can't believe this woman is like it loves me and is in my life." And she's like, "All right, give it here then." And she like steps away from the sauce. And Dani's,
I'm just
like,
enjoying watching
stirring.
The perfect reenactment.
And she's like, "Want me to keep stirring?" And she's like, and Jamie says like, "Yeah, see if you can salvage it." And so Dani's over there stirring and she like keeps sneaking peeks at Jamie while she's like getting her hands into the plant because she's like probably really nervous and also just like full of that Dani energy where she like just needs to keep going and moving at all seconds of the day. And so Jamie's digging through the plants, like the pot and the soil, and she finds the clatter ring and she picks it up and she's like real confused on her face. Her face is just like, doesn't get it. And she turns around and she's like, "Dani, why is that?" And then Dani doesn't let her even like go with that. She just turns around immediately and is like, "Here's the thing. You're my best friend and the love of my life. And I don't know how much time we have left, but however much it is, I want to spend it with you. And I know we can't technically get married, but I also really don't care. We can wear the rings and we'll know. And that's enough for me, if it's enough for you." And Jamie starts sobbing and is like, I reckon
that's enough for me. Yeah.
And then they kiss and they say, "I love you. I love you too." And they're like crying.
Also, you literally did not have that written down. You just did that off the top of your head.
I know. I didn't have it written down. To be fair, I did just watch it like maybe an hour ago, but like, yes, I do have it memorized.
Incredible.
And then it ends there and they get married and everything is happy forever and ever.
It's exact.
And then it ended.
It's exact.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Fly Manor's over.
That's it. Okay, so we have the proposal. It's beautiful.
Roll credits.
I also love this. Well, yeah, we roll the credits.
So when Dani proposes, then they go to Paris to see Owen so that they can celebrate their engagement wedding thing. And so they announce it to him and he's like, "This is the best news. I'm so happy for you both." And they like toast to Hannah, which is like really sad. And they talk about how the kids don't remember Dani, even though she sacrificed everything for them. And that's fine, I guess. I'm not mad. And then and Dani's still seeing the lady and she's all bummed out and stuff. And that's like when they get back from that, that's when she like finally tells Jamie that like she's been seeing the lady again. And that all happens prior to getting the civil union.
Then we get the civil union and Jamie comes in with the civil union. She's been waiting in line all day and there's water everywhere. And she goes and Dani's just staring at herself in the bathtub or staring at the lady in the lake. And she says to her, "I only see you. I don't see the lady in the lake. I only see you." And I'm like,
it's so sad because Dani like, can't see herself. She can't see herself at all.
I know. And she's just like, "I'm so tired. I see you in front of me. I see you touching me. And I'm aware of that, but I don't feel it." And Jamie says, "If you can't feel anything, I'll feel everything for the both of us."
The way that Dani's voice... breaks and cracks and just falls apart when she says Jamie's name after she says that she's so tired and she like just doesn't know how long she can keep it up. Like the way that she says her name is just so heart-wrenching. Like it gets me every single time. Cause she's just so broken by then.
Well, also too, it's like I feel like there's just so many layers to this of like loving someone who has a mental illness, mm-hmm. like loving someone who has Alzheimer's too, yeah. where like they're like losing parts of themselves. That's why I said like mm-hmm. it reminds me of The Notebook, mm. where it's like that just like constant patience with your partner who like forgetting themselves and forgetting you, but you remember yes. them and you're like, I will love you enough for the both
and
of
she
us.
Even and like, goes on later and says like she won't have her memories, but she will live on in my memories. Like I will literally always remember this. And then it also like kind of ties into how Owen's mom, like when she dies from dementia. And I just thought it was interesting how at that time, you know, from the outside, Jamie was like, you know, put me out of my misery. If I'm ever in a situation like that, I wouldn't want to have to live like that, losing little bits of yourself here, like every single day. And then that's literally what happens. And instead of being like, put Danny out of her misery, she's like, absolutely not. You are going nowhere. And like,
mm-hmm. all this changes her tune real fast. Stay with me forever. What are you talking about? Yeah.
Yeah. She changes her tune real fast.
And then we do have to get to our worst part.
No.
Danny wakes up. She has her hands around Jamie's neck and she's like, I gotta go. I'm gonna hurt the person that I love the most. And so she said the au pair knew the moment had come and she could not risk the most important thing, her most important person. Not for one more day.
Stop it.
I know.
They were out of days.
They were out of days.
How dare you?
So Jamie showed. I know it's horrible. Also, what does she, Kristen? You did this as a trivia question. What does she write on the paper?
How dare
she
you?
She writes, "I love you." I'm sorry, Ellie asked me, so I feel like I have to say it. She said, "I love you with every piece of me left," because literally the pieces of her that are left are the pieces that were strong enough to like combat the lady from literally killing Jamie and. Enough to get her to Bly.
Okay, remember that time you said you were going to do a quick plot recap and now we've spent like 45 minutes just trudging through all of the feelings about this? Like, that's fun.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. It's hard. I'm trying my best. I'm so close.
Ellie's like, just a real quick recap. So what does the note say? Kristen, can you reenact the whole scene for us, please?
Please. If you wanted to listen to this, we're doing an entire reenactment.
Okay, well, so Jamie... I gotta go, so this was fun.
All right, so Jamie shows up to Bly Manor. She gets into the lake. She swims down. She sees Danny. She's trying to scream, it's you, it's me, it's us, praying it could be her instead, but it's not. She can't do anything. The lady in the lake was Danny.
Stop it.
And Danny would never.
Stop it. That?
Because Danny knows the difference between love and possession, and she would never mix them up.
Exactly. It's so painful. And then we come all the way, full circle. We're back at the wedding. We realize that this has been the gardener all along. Owen's there.
Yes.
Flora's the one who's getting married. Henry's there. And we come back all the way from the first scene to the last scene. All back again with her waiting for her love to come back to her.
But her love does. She's been there the entire time. She's right there, but they can't see her. She won't let Jamie see her, which is like very intentional, I think, on Danny's part. I do believe that if Jamie saw her, like that would be it. Jamie wouldn't do anything else. Like she wouldn't continue to live her life.
Yeah, she's been there the whole time.
But Jamie thinks that Danny forgot everything and forgot her and forgets their memories together and their life together. And I just think that's really sad that Jamie thinks that because, like, she's wrong, obviously, because Danny's standing right there.
She never forgot.
Danny would never.
Danny would never forget.
Danny would never.
All right,
never.
We're done with our plot recap.
Okay, we're gonna look.
Are you ready to shop? Rakuten's Big Give Week is back. Get 15% back at hundreds of stores, and it's all happening this week, May 6th to May 13th. It's the perfect time to shop for everything on your list for spring and summer, like clothing, outdoor gear, and travel. I know I'm using this week to stock up on some warmer weather essentials at Ray-Ban and Ulta, and I love that Rakuten even helps me save on travel at sites like hotels.com. Rakuten really is the best way to shop, and you can save even more by stacking cash back on top of deals. Plus, during Big Give Week, that cash back is bigger than ever. With Rakuten, membership is free, and when you sign up and shop today, you get an extra 10% cash back boost. That's an extra 10% cash back on top of the 15% cash back. You won't see higher cash back rates than these. Go to Rakuten.com or download the Rakuten app. R-A-K-U-T-E-N. Shoppers get it.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's give everyone a breather. We'll take a minute. We'll listen to some ads. We'll come back and we'll like talk about it all some more. That'll be fun.
Here at Les Hangout, it is Pride Month 24/7. Don't you wish the warm feeling of Pride Month never ended? Bold Strokes Books is also on the same page. They have the queer books you're looking for to keep you feeling proud 12 months a year. Bold Strokes Books has the genres you love, romance, mystery, sci-fi, fantasy, and in the formats you want, ebooks, paperbacks, and audiobooks. Bold Strokes Books publishes quality, diverse, award-winning LGBTQ fiction where LGBTQ characters are always the stars of their stories. I just want to say I'm just so excited about Bold Strokes Books. I love content that is for us and by us, so thank you, Bold Strokes Books, for doing this. Visit the Bold Strokes Books web store to browse hundreds of titles and sign up for free newsletters to get all the scoop on daily bargains and events. And for listeners of the show, through June 30th, Bold Strokes Books is offering 20% off any one ebook when you go to boldstrokesbooks.com and check out with coupon code LESHANG in all capital letters. That's 20% off an ebook at boldstrokesbooks.com, coupon code LESHANG, LEZHANG. Don't you wish Pride Month would never end?
Les Hang.
I feel like we should just start with, what do we like about the representation in Bly Manor? So, Kristen, why don't you start, since you are our resident Bly Manor expert?
So, one of the things I really liked about the representation is that the characters are older. I liked that Dani didn't, like, she knew kind of what was going on, but she didn't come to terms with her sexuality until a lot later. She struggled with compat, like, right up to, like, almost the last possible second to get out of it. And she, you don't see that a lot. I see a lot of shows where the representation is, like, teenagers or, like, maybe college students, but, like, Dani has been a teacher for 9 years at that point. I just like that they're, like, basically they're in their late 20s, early 30s, and Dani's just now coming to terms with her sexuality, and then she, like, fully commits to it. Like, she's like, you know what? I can't do this anymore. She's been telling herself just to keep waiting, you know, just keep putting it off. Like, you can do it. You can just keep going in this pattern. It's all you know, it's what's expected of you. And she breaks out of that, which is very hard to do when you're so stuck in it, especially, like, she lives in the South, you know, like, she lives
in a culture that just isn't accepting. It's the 80s. It's just, it's not a good time to be gay. Like, our timing couldn't be worse. Like, so I just think that it's great that she decides to do that for herself and to get away, and that she allows herself to love Jamie, because that's a big struggle for her. Like, that isn't easy to do when you're in that spot. And I thought it was nice to see, like, a visual representation of Comp Het. I've never seen that before. Like, I don't think there's another example where, like, Comp Het actually follows someone around as, like, a little ghost.
It's also, so, like, it's not just having, like, a, you know, embodiment of Comp Het. I also love that in a show where, like, I feel like a lot of straight people watch it and don't know what they're signing up for, I love having a representation of Comp Het that is, like, a literal horror. Like, here is a horrifying, scary ghost man, like, clingy, weird, possessive, like, glowy-eyed nightmare creature that represents, like, Comp Het. Because it's, like, as yes.
It's how it actually feels, to be honest.
Yeah, it is. And it's, like, I actually don't think that I have ever seen such a really visceral embodiment of it that feels so right. It feels so right to be like, yes, here is this, like, unshakable, nagging specter of men.
True.
Of men and how you should be attracted to them, just looming over, breathing down your neck, like, grabbing onto you physically. I mean, it's just, yeah. It's like,
and it only shows up every time she thinks about another woman, mm-hmm. sees Jamie. Like, it doesn't come up unless she's doing something gay, basically.
I mean,
like,
that's not she true. Has a gay thought, he comes up, like, other bam. Times. Like, she sees him when the car drives by and stuff. There's some other triggers, but, like,
yeah, I mean, she sees him some other times, but it's a lot of it happens when she's yes. having, like, a gay moment.
But it is cool, like, to be able to point to that in a way that, like, I feel like you could show straight people, like, the first few episodes until Deadman, like, disappears, and just be like, that. That's what it's like. Like, that's what Comp Het feels like. Is there is just this thing breathing over your shoulder all the time that you're constantly aware of and you can't get rid of until you decide to, like, step beyond it and say, like, it's okay. Until you make that decision, it is always there. It is following you around. Mm-hmm. It is eating at you. It is, like, worming its way around your brain. And it is always there being like, but also, like, but you're straight, right? Like, but you're still straight, though. But it's.
But you're supposed to be straight.
Yeah, it's.
You're
it should be men. To do you know this. That, right? Like, you should be straight. You do know.
My favorite thing is that Danny's like, I thought I wanted it. I wanted to want it. Because
yes.
that's, like, I've never related to something so much. Like, I've never seen it on TV. Like, I've never actually seen a representation that's, like, spoken to, like, my own experience in that way. Because, like, I dealt with Comp Het for a large portion of my life. And it was just kind of amazing to see it like that. Because she just says it in just such clear words that it's just, like, that's exactly what it is. Like, you want it. You want to be, like, quote, normal or whatever everybody else seems to want you to be. You want to be what society wants you to be.
Yeah.
And, you know, you try your best for as many years as you can hack it. But eventually, you know.
Yeah.
Eventually, you can't do it.
I love to. And this is, like, such a low bar. But that she chooses to get out of that relationship before... Mm-hmm. She starts a relationship with a woman.
She doesn't
surprise.
Cheat.
I know we've talked about this
she
many times,
cheat.
But it's like she chose, like, she was miserable in her relationship and she didn't cheat. She chose to leave. And obviously she still has the guilt of choosing to leave. Like,
Okay, but, okay, but I'm going to say, like, yes, and I agree, but also as one of the few times where we get to see someone, like, make that choice and then have it immediately get turned back around on them, like, so horribly.
I know. Yeah.
So I traumatically. Know. And I'm just like,
I thought it was very traumatic. They made her coming out so traumatic. Like, she finally stood up for herself. She finally said, this is who I am and this is what I want.
It's
and then
brutal.
The person who's supposed to be her very best friend since she was a little kid and has been like literally asking her to marry him since they were 10 is like, F you, like, I hate you, how dare you do this to me, like, as if it's even about him.
Yep.
And then like has the audacity to go get hit by a truck like in front of her while she's like right there.
How dare you
out.
Sir,
like, come on, like come on.
Yes.
Like, she just came out, she's so fragile right now, like, she doesn't need that.
Her face in that moment, I'm just like, it is God, it is so gutting. So I'm with you, Ellie. I agree, but I do have to say, like, God, they did not really let her have a moment there.
Well, and that is the thing too, where like I wouldn't be like, this is a shining example of perfect representation, because I disagree.
But also, like, she didn't cheat, so I
true.
Mean, there's
that's why
story.
I'm saying, like, it's a low bar. Like, I'm like, it's such a fucking low bar. Why?
The bar is on the ground.
Yeah. And too, like, this was written by a man, right? The entire show. There is still, I feel like men are present a lot in
more
the narrative. Because, I mean, because, like, it can be both good and bad of, like, okay, yeah, Compet is terrifying and horrific. However, like, he's still there, right? Like,
I wish they'd spent a little less episodes on it. Like,
yes.
I wish that they had done it, but that maybe it had gotten over sooner.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if that part could have just been done sooner, that would have been
yeah, and that's
nice.
What, like, a lot of the articles I was reading were, like, they gave him so much time. Like, Edmund
mm-hmm.
got so much time, got so much backstory, got so much stuff.
And, like, for what?
And, like, why? Yeah. Like,
who even cares about him?
We
Does
don't.
Anyone actually care about him?
We don't.
Even the straights don't care about him, I don't think. I doubt it.
We don't.
The straights are too busy simping for Owen. Like, there's no way they care about Edmund.
They don't.
Well, and look, let's give Mike Flanagan credit, because I will say, like, yes, sure, a straight guy wrote this and Hill House, but I'm gonna say we need that, like, the TikTok audio of, like, bi wife energy. He's got
yes.
bi wife energy, right? Like,
true.
I will say that, like, there are ways in which I will say we can and will nitpick certain things, but, like, it is a beautiful love story
these
two women, right? Like, at its core, Bly Manor is a love story, and it's a
yeah.
love story about
it's a lesbian love story
and
core.
Like, I'm still here for that, like, regardless of a lot of other things, and regardless of, like, whether people disagree about the ending or not, like, I'm still mm-hmm. here for it. So
I agree. Let's talk about the ending. This is, like, a tricky thing to navigate, because it is technically Barrier Gaze. However,
yes.
we're in
well,
a horror
is it
story.
Though, is it, though? Because here's the thing.
But is it?
Here's the thing. Barrier Gaze, as a trope, is, instead of developing your characters or giving them real endings, you kill them off when you don't know what to do with them. And I will say, in terms of that trope, it is not that. It is not Barrier
Gaze. Isn't it also you kill your gaze when they're happy?
No.
I think it's
not usually.
Like, they have one moment.
Addition,
yeah, because it's like they have one moment of, like, pure happiness. And then they
yeah,
die.
Yeah, but that's like in those cases where, like, they literally have just had sex for the first time,
and then
all
die.
Of a sudden, oh, look, they're dead.
Because that's what it is
what
with, like, Tara,
about.
And isn't that what it's with Klexa?
Yes, and, like, that's what
well,
happened.
No, it's just
Root
that they
Shaw
wrote them out
yeah.
that way. They were just like, your story
died.
Ends here, you know? And, like, and did it need to happen? Because it's the same argument we've had with Tara and Willow before, is, like, did Tara need to die to precipitate the events that you know happened? Like,
they could have done it a different
they
way,
could have sure but, like, can this story end a different way?
Yes.
I think the thing about this story is that it's based on, so because it's based on the book, like, I think they just kind of followed the script, you know, like, in the book, like, the au pair, I'm pretty sure died, like, she was always going to die. And the thing about it is, like, they were originally going to have a male actor be the gardener. So, like, they weren't really planning on, like, making anyone gay initially, I don't think. And then they threw that in. So, like, it's not like they went into this and were like, let's kill off a gay. That would be fun.
Yeah, and that's like, and that's why I'll give them, I will give them the pass for killing her. I'll give them the pass on it. Because
one thing that I think is very important about Danny's death is that Danny chose it. She had full agency at that moment. She said, I am not going to let them kill me. I'm not going to let the lady in the lake have her way. I'm not going to let her make me make these horrible, do these horrible things that I'm going to regret. I am going to go and take myself and deal with it when I know the time is ready. And Danny, like, got to have agency in that decision. And I think in every other example of bury your gaze, there's no agency. You're just shot. Like, you're dead now. True. Danny, like, actually had it. She knew the whole time what to expect, really, and she dealt with that, and it was, but she also got 13 years of love and happiness and life, living as her truest self and, like, having that life with Jamie, and then she chose, she said, this is the time, I can't wait any longer, I can't put Jamie at risk anymore, and I think it's very important that, again, a kind of like in the same concept of like possession taking away your agency, like she took a little bit of herself back from Violet in a way in order to make that decision and in order to be in charge of her own
well
death.
And let's talk about Violet, because here's the other thing that I think you have to do with this show is you have to contrast. There's three couples, right? There's three couples in Bly Manor of note, really. We skipped over the stories for the other two, so if you haven't seen the show, go watch it, come back. We have Jamie and Danny, we have Hannah and Owen, and we have Rebecca and Peter, right? And there's so many interesting ways that the three couples contrast with each other. Because obviously there's this whole question of possession, right? Like, is it love? Is it possession? You have Rebecca and Peter who are just like toxic all around. Just all bad. Mm-hmm. All bad, all toxic, all possession, all the time. Like, I need to possess you so badly that, like, I will literally kill you so that you can't leave me and have a life
extremely messed up.
Not the best, Peter. Not the best. Then you have Hannah and Owen, right? Which, like, also so pure, so loving, love them so much, and yet so unfulfilled. Like, so...
so doomed, really.
Sad. Just sad, right? Like, there's that contrast.
It's so sad that she just... they never tell each other. They never, like, really get there.
They
act it and they feel it, but they don't really quite get there.
They don't. And then there's also the other comparison that I think is really interesting is once you bring in, right, because we talked about how Deadmond is a different kind of ghost in this show, right? Like, Deadmond's like the Comp Het Spectre ghost. The other ghosts are more real, literal things, like,
ghosts that are tangible.
Yeah, that interact with you, that are real, that are, like, almost tangible in the space. And the other contrast that I think is interesting is you have three couples, one of them two ghosts, one of them one ghost, one of them zero ghosts until...
possessed later on.
Until the end where you get possessed by a ghost, right? And so there's also, like, this weird way that, like, this whole question of mortality and possession kind of factor into play, you know, where it's like you have these two ghosts who, like, just want to own each other. You have, like, this one ghost and one person where, like, one of them is still, like, Hannah in a lot of ways is still just holding on to Owen.
I think she's so tethered to Owen, that's why she doesn't leave at first.
Which, like,
that's the only thing keeping
But which her there. Does kind of beg the question, like, isn't that a type of possession? Like, that she, until she is released, like, she is holding onto Owen and she is holding him there
to her,
you know? Which, like, I love their love story and I love that, like, their little coupling, but, like, that is possession, you know? And then you have, like, this just held aloft little beacon of, like, look, it's love, and it's love that, like, even when this, you know, like, fucking ghost gets in the way and is like, I will possess everything because I am Viola and I have been wronged. And you're just like, ugh, Jesus, like, let it go. But
get over it.
Get over it.
Several hundred years, Viola. Come on now.
You know what's so funny, though? As someone with, like, a lot of Sicilian family who can, like, hold grudges, like, beyond death, like, I feel represented... in this show, because I'm like,
you would still be mad like 300 years
yeah
later.
Like, that's my family. Like, they'll literally, like, they will hate beyond death. Like, that is how they roll in Sicily. I don't know, dude. So it's like,
I get it.
That's how they roll in Sicily.
It's like, it, there it is. And she's just like, nope, like, that is not what this is, and I refuse to let it be that. And I don't know, I just think it's a really fascinating show, and I'm willing to give them the pass for, like, the story that they were telling and the comparisons that they are putting out there, and I like it.
I remembered another thing I wanted to say. I think that also another thing that Bly Manor does that I don't see a lot in mainstream representation, like, shows that are really not just for us, but, like, made for the straights, really, and made for just anyone, is that they made the narrator Jamie. So, like, the narrator and the person, the entire story, like, the lens you see the story through is a lesbian. And the main character that she, the person whose story she says she's telling is Danny's story. So it's her, and then the main character, like, the narrator and the main character are both lesbians on this mainstream show that everybody can see. And I just think that's so awesome. Like, these, like, 30-something power couple boss lesbians with their little flower shop in Vermont, just, like,
well,
it's just amazing.
And that's one of the big things that I love about it, too, is, like, the domesticity of it, right? Because, like, mm-hmm. we don't really get, like, just, like, a lesbian couple who's,
like
comfortable
no
and happy.
If you take
like,
out
comfortable
the
and happy,
like,
that's possible? What?
If you take out the ghosts, they would have no drama in their relationship. Their relationship's just, like, a normal, ordinary, married... domestic situation, you know, like, they're just happy and in love. Like, they have their little flower shop, they have their little life together, and there's nothing.
That's so nice.
They're not, there's no drama, there's no cheating, there's no, like, other woman or anything. There's nothing.
There's
going
no
on.
Other like, man.
There's, just, there's no, other no man drama randomly. At all, except for, like, all those fucking ghosts, man. Like, god damn it.
Yeah, like, all those ghosts just had the audacity to be there and be possessing her. It's if they weren't there, it'd be just be a nice little lesbian. Well, I guess it would just be Imagine Me and You.
Well, except less drama.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true too.
Because even Imagine Me and You has a lot of drama. Let's talk a little bit about the marry your gays. Because we do get a proposal. Mm-hmm. We do get a marriage.
I thought it was sweet that they did that because, like, all of us grew up during that time period where gay marriage wasn't a thing. And I remember how exciting it was when civil unions became legalized. And I remember, like, prior to civil unions existing as a thing. And so I just think it's really cool to see that represented because I know, like, a lot of the younger, like, the kids in the fandom, like, they weren't around really for that. So they've never really known entirely what that's like.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was nice to see, like, as a person who came out, like, well before gay marriage became legal and, like, just a couple of years after civil unions became a thing in a couple of states, I thought it was really nice to, like, see that on screen and see, like, how they were so committed to each other, like, even though they knew they, like, technically couldn't be in, like, all the ways that a heterosexual couple
yeah.
could.
Well, and because it's so real, like, that is a real piece of our history, you know, and it is funny. It's like, it's funny to me to watch shows like this now and to realize, like, yeah, like my kids will grow up.
They'll think it's normal.
And right. And like, and we'll have to, like, you know, watch shows with stuff like this and be like, well, when your mom and I got married, like, it wasn't legal mm-hmm. either. You know, it's like, we're going to be those, like, weird crotchety old people, like, back in my day. And yeah, it's nice.
Well, yeah,
they do a nice job.
Because a lot of
it.
The younger people, they don't know. Like, I was, like, talking to some of the younger fandom members. I've talked to them before, and they either don't really know that much about, like, the 80s and the AIDS crisis. They don't really know, like, what implications that had for
being a lesbian at that time and for how that would have impacted Dani and like maybe why it was so much harder for her struggling with Compet, maybe why it took her so much longer. They don't know that stuff. They don't really recognize it or realize exactly what it was like.
Yeah.
So I think it's nice when shows, you know, show parts of our history like that.
I agree. And also just like the fact that it is so like wholesome and sweet of like how the proposal happens of like, I do not care. Like I literally like just me and you having these rings is enough for me.
What I think is great is that Dani went a large portion of her life caring so much about what society thought of her and like wanting to do everything that like was proper, that she was like expected and supposed to do. And when she makes that speech, she says, I don't care that we can't do this. Like, I don't care that society says no, essentially. Like, she has gotten to the point where she's so confident and so happy in her relationship with Jamie and so fulfilled that she can say, you know what? Screw that. I don't care about that. We have each other. That's enough for me. And I think that's so beautiful because that like she came all the way around on her journey with her sexuality.
It's so beautiful. Let's talk about the timeline as we're talking about marriage, because it was like tricky to figure out, but I think I sort of
it was
figured it out from Googling some things. And I think you did as well, Kristen.
I think so.
So
I believe so.
Somebody online said they think that they thought they were together for 13 years, or at least they got their civil union 13 years after they started dating, because civil unions were legalized in Vermont in 2000.
In 2000.
And they started their relationship in 1987. So what else did you find right about our timelines here?
So my thought was they got together in 1987 and Flora was 8 at the time. When we see them in the Owens restaurant celebrating that they're getting married and celebrating that Dani had proposed, Flora is 17. So, I mean, as far as I can tell with math, that's 9 years, right? So they've been together 9 years when Dani proposes. I'm not real good at math because I'm gay, but it's been 9 years. And so they had like a good amount of time, like, before Dani started really going downhill. And then 9 years in, she proposes, they go and celebrate it. And then that would be like around 1996, 97. And then they have a couple more years then before civil unions are a thing. And then they would get that in 2000. And then it's kind of iffy. Like, does she die that same year? It feels like she does.
It feels pretty quick from there.
I think she does.
Yeah. Although what I love about doing the timeline that way is that means that like we're supposed to pretend that Jamie looked like Amelia Eve for like 15 years and then like overnight like morphed into Carla Gugino. So like great.
Yeah, like she literally, it's only 7 years after she died.
Only 7 years. So somehow Jamie went from looking like Amelia Eve to looking like Carla Gugino in 7 years.
That, I feel like they tried. They put like a few gray streaks in her hair. Like,
they did.
And like
yeah,
when
Jamie
in the scenes where
gray.
She's like by the tub. But I'm like, no, this is not right.
Jamie had started going gray, but like that's not the same as
changing your whole face.
I'm just throwing that out there because it makes me laugh. That's all.
It is. It's also you literally couldn't have just like, yeah, they're not that much older.
They could have aged up Amelia Eve, but then we wouldn't have had Carla Gugino. And we love Carla Gugino. So like, I like that she's there. I mean, she looks sexy as hell, but like she doesn't really look like
I mean
Jamie,
no but like but same fine. Thing for Owen, right? Like Owen looks like that for 15 years and then
Owen
suddenly
looks,
is like this tiny old man at the wedding and you're like, okay,
so they see Owen in 1996 in the restaurant, right? And he looks like Owen, and then in 2007 he somehow looks like that. Like, what?
How? Okay, so let's do an age thing. How old are they supposed to be in 2007? 50?
Well, Yeah, maybe, right? Because if they're supposed to be, if we think they're all kind of 30s, maybe early 30s, late 20s, early 30s.
I think Danny was like, so I knew this because I had Danny's resume at one point and I had looked at it, but I can't like quite remember. But she said she was a teacher for 9 years. So she would have had to go to school, right? And then like become a teacher. So like say she's like 28 probably to be a teacher for 9 years if you like start at like 21. Like, that's the minimum that she could be.
She would have to be 31, like 30. If she was a teacher for 9 years.
Well, you, I feel like, you could have done, like, a student around, teaching, like, some teaching program. Like,
minimum. I'm saying,
as much education required back then either. Like, nowadays, you probably need, like, a freaking master's. But, like, back then, like, you didn't need as much education, I don't think, to become a teacher. So...
True.
Maybe. So yeah, I'm going to say, I mean, at the absolute like low end, she could be like 28, 29, sure.
Okay, so then this is like 30
Jamie's
years later.
I know Jamie's mom left their family in 1967. And this is a random piece of information that I remember from the monologue. And so she left in 1967. Jamie was apparently like around 8 when that happened because she was taking care of Mikey. And so if she was 8 in 1967, I like can't do math.
She's
so I don't 20, actually know what that means, but there are numbers.
28 in 1987. Yeah. Everyone has turned off the podcast already. They're like, please stop doing numbers.
They don't care.
I've got all of this. But basically, it's been 20 years. They're 50. They're like 50-ish.
Yeah.
And I feel like they made them like, I don't know why they needed Carla Gugino's hair. She's so gray. They were like, she's 75.
Oh, listen.
It's fine. Okay, so that's our timeline. Really, bottom line is, when we talk about representation, we do have a lesbian love story that lasts for 13 years, which is sort of the point of like the Moonflower stuff, right? Where we're like, oh, I wish they had more time. But that's actually a lot of time. And it is like...
beautiful because it's temporary. Like the beauty is in the mortality of it.
Stop
exactly,
it.
The beauty is in the mortality of this actually pretty long relationship.
Yeah, I mean, because the truth is, like Jamie says in the diner, like one day at a time is all anybody's got when you get down to it. Like we all don't know. Like sure, like maybe it's a little more pressing for Danny, but it's like that for people with all sorts of different illnesses and living with like mental illness, living with different chronic disabilities, and then even just illnesses that, you know, come out of nowhere, like cancer. Like there are things that just happen. You don't know how much time you have with someone. So honestly, like everyone has that same problem. Like it's very relatable, like regardless of whether you're possessed by a ghost or not. Like at some point, you know, your happiness is going, at some point you're going to die. And at some point when you're married, like one of you will die first. I mean, unless you're in The Notebook and you both somehow die at the same exact time.
And turn into birds.
So like, since that didn't happen.
Yes.
You know, I still think it's beautiful because 13 years where they truly were dedicated to each other. They loved each other and they continue to love each other even after Danny's gone. And I think that that's really beautiful.
I agree. It's a beautiful, beautiful lesbian love story. And that's why we have to do a Les Essentials on it.
And write a rude song about it.
Get ready.
It's so mean.
Are we ready for our Q&A?
You guys are going to sob.
I think we're ready.
Q. And gay.
Okay, are you ready? Question one.
Yes.
Are you more of a Jamie or a Danny?
I want so badly to be like Jamie, but I know that I'm more like
Danny. I mean, I think that's true for all of us.
No.
At least, no. Like, look at my shirt right now. Look at me. I'm a Jamie.
Come on. I can pull off Poppins.
Look, I can't keep a plant alive, and I had so much compet. I just can't be as cool as Jamie. I just can't.
Alrighty, ready? Question number two. What was the scariest moment in Bly Manor? A, the doll face boy. B, Peter's death. C, Viola grabs Danny. Or D, compulsory heterosexuality.
Oh, that's obviously compulsory heterosexuality. That thing's
terrifying.
A nightmare. Friggin' nightmares.
Terrifying.
Nightmares for a compulsory heterosexual. I can't even say it. It's so scary.
So true. Terrifying.
Right?
It's I'm going to start terrifying. Telling my kids ghost stories about it.
Night.
Question three. What would be your Bly Manor job? A, cook. B, gardener. C, au pair. Or D, housekeeper.
I feel like I could see myself, I'm not very,
I think I'm okay at cooking, but I don't think I would be the cook. I also can't keep plants alive, so I can't be the gardener, even though I desperately want to. And I worked in a floral flower shop for like one semester in college and like did flower arranging. But I still think probably au pair would be better.
Fair enough.
For me.
All right. Question number 4. Who is the real bad guy in Bly Manor? A, Viola. B, Peter. C, Perdita. Or D, Mike Flanagan?
First of all, it's Mike Flanagan because he filmed that scene where Jamie wakes up when Danny's leaving and we don't get to see it. So.
You're right.
It's Mike Flanagan.
First robbing us of that sex scene.
No, it's not a sex scene. It's where Danny and, well, we were robbed of that. But when Danny's leaving, like instead of leaving a note, she like, well, before leaving a note, there's supposed to be a scene where Jamie wakes up in the middle of the night and sees that Danny's trying to leave and, like, catches her and, like, stops her. And they have this whole emotional discussion. And then they, like, sob and hold each other. And, like, it's a whole thing. And we missed it.
You know we want that.
Give it to the
lesbians would prefer the sobbing more than the sex scene.
I wanted that feelings. You know, I didn't have enough feels already. I needed more.
But speaking of Ellie, question 5, our final question. Did Bly Manor need a sex scene? Yes or no?
Oh, God. You're really going to make me answer this. Look, the thing is, I'm going to say yes because I just want to see one.
There's no wrong answer in the Q&A,
but
Kristen.
The correct answer is yes.
It didn't technically need one. Does it need one? No. But, like, do we want one? Yes. And don't lie to me, people listening, because I know you wanted one,
we
too.
We all wanted one.
We all wanted one. Remember, you can give us your own answers to this episode's Q&A questions on our Twitter at Les Hangout Pod. Kristen, thank you so much for hanging out with us and talking about Bly Manor.
Yes, thank you for having me. I am so excited about being here.
Where can our listeners find you on social media?
I am all over the place. You can find me at Princess Coco Puffs on Instagram or at -purple on Twitter. And those are the places where I am the most. Or you can find me just, you know, behind the scenes at the Les Hangout.
Are there any projects coming up that you want to talk about?
Yes. Well, you know, I've been working a lot behind the scenes on Les Hangout's Porch Pride 2021 that's coming up on June 5th. And we have a lot of exciting things that are going to be going on for that. Very, very excited to get more information out there about that soon and to see everyone and so that we can have the loudest, proudest, gayest pride you've ever seen on your screens.
Yes, we will. Thank you so much, Kristen, for hanging out with us. You're the best.
Yay, I love you guys.
Let me hear you say hip, hip, hip.
We love hearing from you and building community, so we want to shout out some of our favorite things each episode. And we want to shout out Emily Brewer, who messaged us on Instagram and said that they're a new listener, binging all of our episodes. We love to hear when somebody's just going through our entire catalog. Hopefully you get to this episode, Emily. Hi. And they're also working on an illustration of Pelsa, which makes me really happy. Send it
incredible.
To us.
Incredible. We also want to shout out Natalia, who reached out on Instagram as well and wanted to send us a Lessential suggestion to cover The Handmaiden, which is definitely on our list. Don't worry. So hopefully we will get to it. Maybe in season 5. Who knows? Who knows what awaits us on the other side of season 5.
And as always, we want to thank our Lesbian Jesus patrons, Mark Foster,
Jess Klaus,
Tanya Ferguson,
Jacqueline Rose Nishino,
Sarah and Julia,
Carrie Ann Lawrence,
Danny Gunlock Tamora,
Brittany Ray,
Alana Rosen,
Tara Gleason,
and Lizette Stye.
And our King Princess patrons, Amy and Ellen,
Leah Henley,
Liz Shen,
and Evelyn Smith. We love all our patrons. Thank you so much. And if you're wanting to spend more time with us over the summer, the best way to do that is to join our Patreon and hang out with us on our Discord. We want to see you there. Remember, you can also find us on all the social medias, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Les Hangout Pod.
You can email us at leshangoutpod@gmail.com.
Or check out our website at leshangoutpod.com.
Whatever app you use to listen to podcasts, make sure that you subscribe. That way you'll get new episodes as soon as they go up, starting in September for season 5.
Also, make sure you subscribe to The Flame. Just look up The Flame, an original podcast musical, and you'll find it on every podcasting app.
We also have a YouTube channel. Make sure that you subscribe there to get any new videos we put up. You can find it at youtube.com/leshangoutpod.
If you want to support the podcast, the best thing to do is rate and review us. We love to read what you have to say.
You can find our Patreon at bit.ly/lespatreon. And as we said, it's a great place to join our Discord, hang out, do some game nights. We have all sorts of good stuff, and it will help us make future seasons of the podcast.
If you want to support us making more musicals, which you know we really want to do, you can do that at bit.ly/theflamepatreon. We will have some fun behind-the-scenes content and some exclusive stuff just for our Flame patrons at bit.ly/theflamepatreon.
If you want to check out our merch, we will still have all of our designs available all through the hiatus. So if you miss us and you just need to wrap yourself in some Les Hangout designs, like a nice warm sweatshirt giving you a hug, that's okay. You can find them at bit.ly/lesshop.
That was so convincing. I'm going to get a sweatshirt. If you want to find us individually, you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Ellie Brigida.
And you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at LSH Foster.
With that, I'm Ellie.
And I'm Lee.
And let's hang out again soon.
Let's hang out.
This episode of Les Hangout is sponsored by Bold Strokes Books, where LGBTQ characters are always the stars of their stories. For listeners of the show, through June 30th, Bold Strokes Books is offering 20% off any one ebook when you go to boldstrokesbooks.com and check out with the coupon code LESHANG in all capital letters. That's 20% off an ebook at boldstrokesbooks.com, coupon code LESHANG, LEZHANG.
Les Hang.
I was running, but he kept on coming. Would it let me escape from the nightmare we'd made? And I saw him everywhere, a panic that I couldn't share with anyone but you. Chase the demons away. You helped me open up my heart and start to live again. You said, if we took it one day, one breath, one heartbeat at a time, I'd love you always till death had washed away the lines. All the
It's you.